curtain has fallen. Now you're on your own. I won't return. Forever you will wait. You're wondering now what to do. Now you know this is the end. You're wondering how you will pay for the way you did behave. You're wondering now what to do. Now you know this is the end. You're wondering now what to do. Now you know this is the end.
El show de Leo Ramírez, lunes 4 a 5 de la tarde en el 101.9 FM, CITR. The Leo Ramírez Show, Monday, 4 to 5 p.m., at 101.9 FM, CITR.
Do you have an approaching test or exam and need help studying? Well, it's time to prepare yourself. The Study Van, www.studyvan.com, is a 100% free website dedicated to helping you achieve excellence. MCAT, History, Chemistry, French, Math, Biology, the Study Van covers it all. Tools are provided so you can create your own study group and do what you need to do. Ace your exam. The Study Van will help you help yourself. Give it a shot, you have nothing to lose, as once again it is a 100% free studying resource. So remember, when you need to study, go to the Study Van, www.studyvan.com.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the downtown area at
The Baker and the Chef, Bang On T-shirts, Beat Street Records, Dunlevy Snack Bar, The Fall Tattooing, Fortune Sound Club, Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Perch, The Portside Pub, Save On Meats, and Vinyl Records.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
Come down to the Hindenburg for CITR's Battle of the Bands Shindig. Three bands play every Tuesday night. Come for cheap beer, free pool, a great stage, and one of Vancouver's best local music showcases. Tickets are $6 at the Hindenburg 23 West Meadow every Tuesday till 17:00.
Breaking news! The Shindig semifinals have begun!
Shindig semifinals showcase some of the best new music that Vancouver has to offer. This week, Tuesday, January 13th, the Vaporettos, Still Creek Murder, and Revered compete for a spot in the finals. Cover is only $6 at the Hindenburg, 23 West Cordova. Doors are at 8.
James Wood, half of Mega Bear. You're listening to CITR. Earfook!
UBC's Art Undergraduate Society invites you to its annual Humanities and Social Sciences Conference on January 17th. Attend your choice of 21 undergraduate academic research presentations and the concluding panel discussion featuring CITR's very own Dr. Ira Nadell, host of Arts on Air. Attendance is free and includes lunch and refreshments. Register today at aus.ubc.ca/conference.
Touchkui, touchkui. All of you come on in. Welcome to Language to Language. This is your host, Woody Morrison. Kaunsunga Inudi Kaang. is hat ang ude aging. Zetlana had es hat ude aging. Heidelberg's old aging. Anyway, in Haida, I'm called Klaunzinga. I'm of the northern Haidas. I am of the Eagle Crest. And I'll say the Eagle Tribe and of the Two-Headed Eagle Crest. And I'm from Heidelberg, Alaska. I came to Canada in 1986. My wife was recruited to teach at Calgary University at their satellite program in Lethbridge. So we went to Lethbridge. It was rather strange, you know, being in Lethbridge, in that we went there in May of 1986, and on the 16th of May, they had a blizzard in which they got well over a meter of snow. So I'm glad I'm here in Vancouver and we don't get that. Last time I saw something like that was probably around 1996, I think it was. My father and I returned from Samoa, and my car was buried in snow here. I live here in Kitts. And anyway, I'm glad to see that we don't get that kind of weather much anymore. I got a little bit of sore throat, so you have to pardon me every once in a while. I have to stop to breathe. Yeah, I've been looking at some of the things that are written about Haidas and about other people here, indigenous peoples, pretty much around the world. And I have one here I thought I'd read. It's called Haida Stories and Beliefs by C. Hill-Tout. And it's from a book on the Ethnological Survey of Canada. And this is a cosmological myth and the story of the origin of the Haida people. In the remote past, Xatin ruled in his kingdom. In the gray clouds that overshadowed the vast deep, all below was dark and watery waste. At that time, Yeth the Raven was the chief servant of Xatlana. One day Yeth ventured to interfere with the conduct of affairs in Cloudland and was cast forth into the outer world. The raven flew back and forth over the deep until he became weary. He grew angry at finding no place where he could rest and beat the water with his wings till it flew up into the clouds on either side of him. And when it fell back again, it was transformed into rocks upon which he rested himself. These rocks grew and extended themselves on every side until they reached from North Island to Cape St. James. Excuse me. Later, these rocks became changed into sand, upon which a few trees eventually sprang up and grew, and thus were the Queen Charlotte Islands brought into existence. The raven now desired someone to assist him in his kingdom. So one day he piled up on the beach two large heaps of clamshells near the present site of Sisk, and then transformed them into human beings, whom he made his slaves. They were both of the same sex and female. In short time, these two slaves became dissatisfied with their condition and complained to their creator, the raven, that he had mismanaged affairs in making them both the same sex. Raven listened in anger to their complaints, but finally altered their condition, notwithstanding, and changed one of them into a man by casting limpet shells at her. Thus were the progenitors of the Haida created. The raven, growing weary of his lonely life, took the woman for his wife. But as she bore him no children, he wearied of her and sent her and a man to a spot now called Skidigit. Wearying of his loneliness once more, he determined to revisit his former home in Cloudland and secure, if possible, a beautiful wife from among the daughters of the heavenly chiefs. One bright summer morning, he started off on his long journey. He soared upward over the lonely sea until the land he had created appeared to him to be a small mosquito. At last he came to the walls of heaven. He concealed himself until the evening, and then, assuming the form of a bear, scratched a hole in the wall and thus made his entrance into his former home. The place had greatly changed since he had been an inhabitant there, and consequently he took time to consider everything he saw so as to form a similar kingdom on his return to earth. There he found that everyone was considered a god or chief, and all were submissive to the chief of light, who still held supreme power as of old. He also found that great chief had divided his kingdom into villages and towns, into lands and seas, and had created a moon and stars, and made a great luminary to rule over all, which he called Jain, the sun. At last he was caught by the hunters of the king and brought into his presence. As Raven appeared to be a beautiful and tame bear, he was kept as a playmate for the king's youngest son. He now spent 3 years in intimate relationship with the royal family and had sufficient time to make careful and necessary observation prior to his descent to the lower world. It was customary for the children in the Land of Light to disguise and transform themselves into bears, seals, and birds. Now it so happened that Raven, under the disguise of bear, was strolling on the beach one evening looking for supper of clams when he espied three other bears approaching him. He knew at once they were children of great sun, transformed himself into a large eagle and stole the sun, which happened to be setting at the time, also the fire stick that was used to kindle the fires, and flew over the walls of heaven with one under each ring, together with one of the three children. When the people found the sun had been stolen, they reported the matter at once to the king. He then ordered his land to be searched, and if they found the thief, to throw him down to head Gautlana, the chief or ruler of the lower regions. But a messenger arriving, who stated that he had seen a large bird flying over the walls of their city with the sun under his wing. At once all gave chase, and Raven was followed. In his flight from pursuers, he dropped the child, who fell down through the clouds into the sea close to Raven's kingdom. Raven also descended, bearing with him the sun and fire stick, in safety to the earth. When the child fell into the sea, he cried aloud for assistance, and immediately the little fishes came in a great shoal to his aid and carried him on their back safely to the shore. These fish are very numerous round Rose Spit at the present day, and their forms, say the Haidas, have remained dinted in the blue clay of the district from the day they bore that heaven-born child ashore until now. The great chief was a lover of peace and consequently did not allow his followers to pursue the raven down to the earth. As Chief Hetqualana might be tempted to enter heaven and give them perpetual trouble. So Raven was unmolested, and another son was created in heaven by the great ruler who loved light and hated darkness. Now, Raven thought that he had secured a chief's daughter, but the child turned out to be a chief's son. The raven loved him excessively and built a house at Roadspit, especially for the accommodation of the child and the son. The child grew to be very powerful and had command over all animals, fish, and birds. Whenever he called the fish, they'd once appear and bear him out to sea. Whenever he wished to fly through the air, he would call to the birds. They would at once come to bear him wherever he wished to go on their wings. The bears and other animals attended to his daily wants and supplied him with salmon and berries. The animals, bird, and fish were created by Raven for the sole benefit of this heaven-born child. Raven also kept the sun and fire stick in a very strong and secure room, as he was afraid that his two former slaves would return and steal them. Presently, the slave wife of Raven returned and begged to be admitted into Raven's society. The request was granted, and she became once more the mistress of the raven's household. He took a great interest in the child and attended to his every wish. In course of time, the child grew to be a handsome young man and began to love the woman. She returned his love and at last resolved to become his wife. The raven soon found they were living as man and wife, and he became very angry and threatened to kill the woman. This treatment caused the pair to escape from the house and hide themselves in the bush. When they fled from Raven's house, they carried with them a large cedar box in which the sun and fire stick was placed. Day after day and month after month, they wandered southward without proper nourishment and in great fear of Raven. They also carried with them the box containing the sun and fire stick. One evening, faint and weary, they sat down near a little creek, and the woman, being very hungry, wept bitterly. Her husband walked a distance up the stream and at last found a dead land otter, but they could not eat it as they had no fire with which to cook it. On the following morning, they remembered they had the fire stick in the box they were carrying. They at once determined to see if they could produce fire with it. They were successful and soon had a good fire with which they cooked the otter. Having made a hearty meal, they proceeded on their way. When they reached Cape Ball, they were hungry again, whereupon the youth began to sing one of the songs taught him in heaven, and the sea receded 4 miles from the shore, leaving a great whale stranded on the beach. The youth surrounded the whale with a circle of stones and rocks so it could not escape. The circle of boulders is said to exist today. The runaway couple lived on whale flesh until they reached the channel which divides Graham and Moresby Islands, where they settled and built a house. On this spot, the village of Skidigit afterwards sprang up. Here they lived for several years in peace and prosperity, and a daughter was born to them, which caused them great joy. In course of time, the daughter grew to womanhood and was an exceedingly beautiful woman. And they would have all been perfectly happy, but there was no prospect for a husband for the maiden. Well, I'll give you a break on that. Where this is 101.9 CITR here at UBC. So maybe we can play some of that.
Come down to the Hindenburg for CITR's Battle of the Bands Shindig. Three bands play every Tuesday night. Come for cheap beer, free pool, a great stage, and one of Vancouver's best local music showcases. Tickets are $6 at the Hindenburg 23 West Coast every Tuesday.
Breaking news, the Shindig semifinals have begun!
The Shindig semifinals showcase some of the best new music that Vancouver has to offer. This week, Tuesday, January 13th, the Vaporettos, Still Creek Murder, and Revered compete for a spot in the finals. Cover is only $6 at the Hindenburg, 23 West Cordova, doors are at 8.
Where's the weed?
Smoke Dizzle
comes to the Electric Owl this Tuesday, January 13th, with openers Nacho Picasso, Sir Michael Rocks, Ill Chris, and Creed Taylor. Show starts at 9. $15 advance tickets are available at Red Cat, Zulu, Beat Street, and Dipped. Brought to you by Timbre Concerts and CITR 101.9 FM.
So here we are back again, and I've been reading from this ethnological survey on Canada. What year was that? It was around the 1880s, I believe it was. In this one, this part of the story was telling about how humans came into being and why there were different humans. One was heaven-born, I guess you put it that way. The other was created from clamshells. But anyway, so I'll continue reading what this writer transcribed. Anyway, we stopped at the point where this slave and this heaven-born woman, I guess it was, were trying to get away from Raven, and they learned to use a fire stick to where they could build fire and cook something. And it says that they reach a channel that divides Graham and Moresby Islands, where they settled and built a house. On that spot, the village of Skidigit afterwards sprang up. They lived there for several years in peace and prosperity, and it says that they had a daughter who grew to be an exceedingly beautiful woman, and they would have been perfectly happy, but there was no prospect of a husband for the daughter. Year after year passed, and they'd given up all hopes of a husband for the daughter, when one day there came from North Island around the west coast the Raven's male slave, whom he had made on the beach at Sisk. This forlorn creature now desired the parents to give him their daughter to wife. The father indignantly refused his request and became very angry at what he considered a great piece of impudence on the part of the clamshell-made man. How could such a being as he look to wed the daughter of a heaven-born chief? But the slave was not to be so easily repulsed. He betook himself to the woods surrounding the house, and whenever father was away, would go and talk to them with the mother. She regarded him as a brother, seeing that they'd been created together. See, she was created from the clamshells. They'd been created together, and told him all her secrets, and even went so far as to tell him where her husband kept the chest containing the sun, which he had stolen from Raven's house at Rosebit. The treasure was stored away in a strongly built house in the woods, where the heaven-born man would frequently go to pray to the gods in the kingdom of light. The woman was not wise in thus divulging the whereabouts of her husband's precious treasure, for the slave, on asking a second time for the maiden and receiving a good kicking from her father, and here's a footnote, it's interesting to note in this connection that the heaven-born man thought nothing of taking the slave for his wife, but was much incensed at the idea of his daughter becoming the wife of a slave. We see that the same notions prevailed among Haidas generally, for although a chief could marry any of his female slaves, no slave could marry a freeborn woman under pain of death. So anyway, that's the footnote. Anyway, gave him a good kicking, and he went away with great wrath, vowing he would be revenged. As soon as night fell, having watched the chief retire, he betook himself to the treasure house and easily entered it through the smoke hole. He then seized a club that he found on the floor, and smashed the box to pieces, taking care not to injure the son. When he had wrought the havoc, he began to ponder upon his miserable lot in life, and presently became enraged at his ill fortune, threw down the son, and kicked it to pieces. But the broken parts, instead of falling to the ground, leaped up into the sky, the greatest piece becoming a sun, the next biggest a moon, and the other pieces stars. Thus were created the Haida sun and moon and stars, according to the traditions of the ancients. When the wretched slave became calm once more, he speedily realized the danger he now stood in at the hands of the heaven-born man. So before dawn of the following morning, he was well on his way to his former abode at North Island. He traveled only by night, hiding himself in the forest during the day, thus avoiding the keen eyes of Raven and meeting with his sister's husband. At last he reached home, and for days he sat brooding over his cruel lot until the happy thought struck him that he should do as Raven had done and go and seek a wife for himself from among the daughters of heaven. But the difficulty was how to get there. This he overcame in the following manner. Taking his bow and arrows in one hand, in his hand one moonlight night, he shot an arrow at the moon, which embedded itself in its luminary face. He then shot another into the notch of the first, and another into the notch of this again, and so on, until he had a line of arrows reaching from the moon to the earth. But all was not accomplished in one night. According to one tradition, he took 364 nights over his task, which later was lengthened into 364 days and nights, which number just makes up the height of year of 13 months of 28 days each. They account for the discrepancy between their year of 364 days and ours of 365 by saying that the slave occupied one day in climbing the arrow ladder, which had been left out of their reckoning. When the slave had completed the ladder, he lost no time in climbing it into heaven. He arrived there early in the morning, and the first thing that he saw was a beautiful woman swimming in a lake of crystal. He stealthily approached the side where she seemed likely to step ashore after a swim to await her. She presently swam in his direction, and no sooner had she put her foot upon the beach than he seized and dropped with her through the clouds into the sea close to the shore of North Island. As he descended, the raven happened to be flying near the spot and perceived something unusual in the air above him and watched to see what it was. At first he thought it to be a pair of large eagles, but presently discovered it to be a slave and a beautiful heaven-born woman. No sooner had the slave led his prize into the house than Raven appeared and demanded the woman should be given over to him. The slave declining to comply with the request, Raven became angry, seized the woman, and transformed the man into an invisible spirit and drove him away from his presence forever. Furthermore, he cursed him and bade him wander over the land and take upon himself the task of caring for the growth and development of every living thing Raven had created. Thus the wanderer, as the slave is now termed by Haida, is always engaged causing the berries and roots to grow for the support of the people. Every plant, flower, and tree is under his control, and thus it is, that Haida land produces the finest trees for canoes throughout the whole northern region. At the present time, Haidas believe that he is fulfilling his destiny, and they think of him with gratitude and offer him sacrifice of berries, roots, salmon, and bear grease. These they place in hollow trees that he may eat when he feels hungry. They believe that he wanders upon the earth night and day and will continue to do so until the end of time, when Raven will recall him. But woe to the Haidas when this takes place, for the trees and plants and fish and animals, the fowls of the air, and even the very land of itself will pass away and cease to be, and then will be their own end come. I find a lot of things that are written in this story deliberately misleading. In fact, when I was growing up, the old people used to tell us when we ask them about the stories that were told to them, if there are deliberate mistakes in there, you know that this is a message from the earlier ones to not trust this person. So there's quite a number of problems in that story, which is a problem throughout the world, in which especially, well, Europeans, when they go to study indigenous peoples. We have one here at University of British Columbia, Wade Davis, who travels around the world learning about indigenous cultures. There's nothing wrong with that. But what it is when you read this story, you find in there a lot of what we call authorial intrusion. The author places his own values into the story, his own translations, like kings, kingdoms, wall, city. One of the things I found interesting in there, too, also was the concept of a ladder. I'll have to give that some thought because we think in terms of a ladder as rungs that you step on one individually, whereas in the description of Raven, of the slave shooting the arrow to the moon, and then the next arrow lodging itself in the very end of the first arrow and so on. So that instead of having a ladder, it's more like a rope. It's a long stick. It's like climbing a pole rather than a ladder. So I've heard that term used before about going above the clouds, but it doesn't talk about it quite the same way. And Europeans still cannot grasp the concept of the star people. Because indigenous peoples talk about the star people. And some of these stories, when you find the place names as to where these villages and everything occurred, if you take, for example, North Island, at one time, North Island was not an island. When you go back to the time of the Ice Age, when the ocean dropped, the ocean level dropped, none of Haida Gwaii was islands. It was surrounded by dry land. All the way, there's Heckett Straits was dry land, and also Dixon Entrance, which is to the north, was primarily dry land. So when you see some of these names in there, and the one that really kind of I have to think about was Hitgualana. Guau can represent a person of very high rank. Lana is a village. So Gualana could be a village chief. But when you put that other... he put het, which we would use hit or git. Git is a child of. Git Gualana. This person is sort of born of that place. So I don't know exactly what I'd have to find out from the Skitigit because this was written in a southern dialect. And so they have different ways of describing these things. But I find that the accuracy, though, in the calendar of 28 days, 13 times 28 is 364, and the 365th day, it was referred to as the day when anything is possible. And this is when that Halunga, this person with no lineage, was able to receive a star-born child, not heaven. Heaven has some specific cultural description, whereas ours didn't have. One of the stories tells of a young man remembering being killed and of climbing that ladder of arrows that... to the sky world of climbing up there. Another one tells of seeing the dwelling in the sky. And in this one, Loon flew up there. And it was through this that Raven came into being. So there are different versions of that story. So there's lots of things in the story aren't explained. when they say he traveled for days and months or weeks, something like that. So what I'm saying is that the writer here was putting on his own cultural interpretation on things, which changes a great deal, makes it very difficult to try to understand what was really being said. And then at the beginning of the story, too, when the person uses the word for raven as yatl or yatl, that is a Tlingit word. The Tlingit people to the north are Dene people, the Dene-speaking people. And so those of us from the north on the Alaska side have somewhat adopted using that term, yatl or yatl. The Tlingit pronounced yatl. And when our word is huye, huye is this black bird. But the spiritual form of it is nunkilstlas. Nunkilstlas is the one that changes form. And like it tells here in this story of how they were able to change form to being different animals and whatever, human. And it's also interesting that I think the Roman god called Hora, I'll have to look that up to make sure I'm correct, was human and bird. And that's where healing came from. They got their healing from this star being, which was bird and human. And we got our healing from this being that could transform itself between human and bird. So there are a lot of similarities that come from the indigenous languages and stories. So anyway, we'll take a break here and play something else for you, a song. Well, see, I'm good. I'm just doing the talk and I don't have to think.
This is the sound of compost and recyclables going into the garbage. Garbage that ends up in the landfill creating greenhouse gases. This is the sound of a more sustainable campus. You can make a difference when you sort it out. Learn more at sustain.ubc.ca/sortitout. Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the downtown area at
The Baker and the Chef, Bang On T-shirts, Beat Street Records, Dunlevy Snack Bar, The Fall Tattooing, Fortune Sound Club, Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Perch, The Portside Pub, Save On Meats, and Vinyl Records.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
G4E features vinyl mixes, exclusive local tunes, good vibes from around the world, a thought and a dream or two. House, techno, ambient, dancehall, hip-hop, African, psychedelic, noise, experimental, and eclectic music. Alternating Tuesdays, 12 to 2 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
UBC's Art Undergraduate Society invites you to its annual Humanities and Social Sciences Conference on January 17th. Attend your choice of 21 undergraduate academic research presentations and the concluding panel discussion featuring CITR's very own Dr. Ira Nadell, host of Arts on Air. Attendance is free and includes lunch and refreshments. Register today at aus.ubc.ca/conference.
Three women, dressed in lingerie, were hanging from the ceiling on meat hooks. In an adjacent room, a man was in bed with two deceased females, also wearing lingerie. He positioned their arms in a sexy embrace. Down the hall, a man holding a chainsaw stood over the motionless body of a sixth woman, lying on a table covered in plastic. These are scenes from a popular music video by a Grammy Award-winning artist. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like entertainment? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
Well, we're back. Anyway, in reading through these stories that were written, this was back in 1880s. 1898 is what it says at the top of the page. Although there are some discrepancies in it, that doesn't mean we should discount it, because there is also some very valuable information in there, and it's our responsibility to find out which ones are which, and how do we learn from those things. Over the last 4 years, I've been voluntarily teaching a class on these kinds of things in Haida. But it's not only Haida, some of the cultural values. It's more of how do we decolonize the language. We take out colonial speak so that we can start understanding again the true concepts of what our languages are saying. Because every language has a different worldview. And here in North America, there were, from what I understand, maybe there are 500 different languages. And so each one expresses a different worldview. And according to our history, there were humans. I mean, there were human, a different type of human before we came into being. The Homo erectus came into being. And I would assume they might have been Neanderthal or something else. But our history only refers to them as people over the horizon, Tladlur Hadas, which means they came into being before we did. And so when we came into being, we were given a language that sounds like the land in which we lived. And so my understanding is that these people before us had ways of communicating, but that was different from ours, that they may have spoken, they made sounds, but nothing that was intelligible to us. So what was developed very early on is every people have a sign language. And so you could go among the different people, and even though you didn't speak their language, everybody tended to understand the same signs as to motions for eating, for friend, for walking, for talking, quite a number of them, and over time they became very, very sophisticated. In a book called Clan of the Cave Bear, what's her name, Owl, the woman that wrote the book, in it she talks about this sign language used by the cave people, and when they filmed a movie here in BC, Clan of the Cave Bear, they didn't quite understand, and so the sign language they used large overt motions when in reality they're very subtle. At one time I was on the board of directors for the Native Film Festival here in Vancouver. What was it called? Image Nation, I think it was. Anyway, one of the films that was submitted was from Australia. And it was a documentary showing a group of men making what they call a number 7 boomerang. It's because of the shape of it. It was shaped like an upside down 7. And this was used for killing large animals like kangaroo. And they threw it differently from the way they did the other. Or it flew differently. When a kangaroo is bounding away, they would throw this directly at the head of the kangaroo, and the thing would rotate, spinning forward, and the thing would come up from behind and hit the kangaroo on the forehead and knock him down, either stun or kill him. But anyway, there were group men went out and they dug up the root of a tree, and there was no words. Nobody was speaking. And I sat and I watched that. I don't know how many times I viewed it, and I'd rerun it, rerun it, rerun it, because I knew something was happening there. And then I saw it. It was very, very subtle. The sign language was used. Sometimes it was just sort of a scrunching of the eyes. Sometimes a nod of the head, sometimes movement of a finger. And then when I talked to the man who made the film, I said, that old man was teaching him how to make that boomerang, wasn't he? And he said, oh, you saw it? And I said, yeah. It took me a long time, but I finally saw it. The movements were so subtle that you had to be looking for them to see them. And so this is something that this is how our brand of human was communicating with those other ones before us, was primarily by sign language, is the way I understand it. Now, that could be entirely incorrect, but that's how I understand it. And so our coming into being, it says came from a clamshell, but that's only the males. If you look at the carving out here at the Museum of Anthropology, and you see Bill Reed's rendering of that creation story, the figures coming out of that clamshell are all male, because the female part of the story is none of our business. But apparently it says women came from the muscle shell, and the inside of the muscle is pink, and it's more vaginal-like than the clam or the cockle, whichever it was, or the horse clam has a very large siphon on it. So when we read those stories, we sort of have to go beyond the simple words that are being used and understand the concepts that are being expressed. We didn't talk about gods. We talked about things that we couldn't see. In this one, they talk about the god of the light. We refer to it as Shungs Kangal Sanwai, which is the big spirit in the air, which means it's invisible. It exists nowhere in nothing and brought everything into being. And the next part of it is Shungs Hanwai, which is the big spirit in the atmosphere, and that's the one we can sense its presence, and it has two aspects to it. One is tangible, the other is intangible. The intangible is we can sense its presence, but it doesn't interfere in our lives, not the way the concept of God is. We don't carry out its purpose. We simply live our lives knowing we're not in control. And there are certain things we can ask for, but primarily it's saying thank you. The one prayer says, I ask to the power of my ancestor be restored to me, this type of thing, or the knowledge, and also ask for the strength to be strong enough to be weak, the courage to be tall enough not to be small, the clear vision to see where I've been, the guidance to take me where I'm going, and the protection I need on my journey. So it's quite different from the way in which this is presented by this ethnographer. But anyway, it's time for me to get out of here. I got to go to work. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Monday or hear you. So take care.
Hello, sports fans. It's been a busy year so far for CITR Sports, with hard-hitting coverage of UBC football, hockey, basketball, and volleyball. The season will be taking a short hiatus over the winter break, but starting in the new year, the sports ramp right back up with UBC teams heading into the playoff stretch. Tune in every weekend for live broadcasts and also on Thursdays at 3:30 p.m. for a recap of the week's events. The first broadcast after the break goes on January 9th at 7 p.m. as the women's hockey team is back in action against the Mount Royal Cougars. Thunderbird Sports live on CITR.
For over 30 years, Discorder has been bringing Vancouver local independent music journalism. If you're a fan, check out the Discorder readership survey on our site at discorder.ca. You could have a chance to win gift certificates to the Rickshaw, the Lido, and Vinyl Records.
This is Jesse Laborde, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening online at cosmicdimensions.com, empowerradio.com, on the Co-Creator Network, or of course at CITR.ca, or on my YouTube page, which is youtube.com/spiritualshow. And we have a return guest today, first time this year so far. And her name is Wendy Newman. She's been on the show a couple of times. And Wendy is the author of 101 First Dates. And she has taught over 100 workshops and spoken to thousands of men and women across the US and Canada. And she is a dating, relationship, and sex educator. And we're going to be speaking with her again today. I'm so excited to have her back on the show. Welcome. Happy New Year, Wendy.
Hi, Marie. Thank you for having me back.
Yay,
hey, everybody.
It's always a pleasure to chat with you. So what have you been up to since the last time you were on the show?
Oh, so much. Been leading workshops. I turned in my book to the publisher. I'm so excited that it's getting published. We're working on that all this year. So it's an exciting year so far.
Cool. And you just did a telesummit. I don't think your interview is up anymore, but can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I did a Ready for the Right Guy telesummit with John Gray and Alison Armstrong and a whole host of other leading experts in the dating and mating and love field. And it's been a really great experience to be with them and to be giving the gift of what we've learned and what we've seen and what we've studied.
Cool. Yeah, I heard the interview with Alison Armstrong and I heard your interview. I haven't listened to any of the the Men Are From Mars guy.
John Gray.
Yeah. So I heard those three interviews. Those were the only ones that I listened to, but they were all really good. And I'm curious if there's any, because you and Alison are always kind of doing your man research. So is there anything mm-hmm. new and cutting edge that you feel like you need to get off your chest right now?